The summary of last week's is at the top. That's the first box. So that was Abram believes God, and at the end it says, and he believed the Lord, and he accounted it to him for righteousness. I'm going to read the whole passage there, and then we'll keep going on so you get the context, because all of this is connected. I just felt that there was so much last week that's brought up in the New Testament that I wanted to bring this out as well. Starting in verse 1, after these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your exceedingly great reward. But Abram said, Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless, and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus? Then Abram said, look, you have given me no offspring. Indeed, one born in my house is my heir. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, this one shall not be your heir, but one who will come from your own body shall be your heir. Then he brought him outside and said, look now toward heaven and count the stars if you are able to number them. And he said to him, so shall your descendants be. And he believed the Lord, and he accounted it to him for righteousness. Okay, so that's where we were last week. Verse 7 now. Then he said to him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to inherit. So God reminds Abram of his original promise. He's just kind of reviewing. He jumps back to what would be Genesis 12. That says God had said to Abram, get you out of, right? So kind of gives, God brings him back to the original relationship. God just picked one guy out of the entire human race and said, hey, you, I'm going to put my finger on you. You do what I tell you. So Abram did that. Verse 8 now. And he said, Lord God, how shall I know that I will inherit it? What had just happened in verses 1 through 6? Abram believed God, and God accounted to him for what? What's Abram struggling with now? Belief? Is it possible to be saved and struggle with belief? The answer is yes. It's interesting, though, that he brings up a word, how. I don't know that he's fully expressing disbelief at this point. In his mind, he cannot see how God is going to accomplish this. That's fair. Anyone ever been in that situation before? You know God's promised to do this, but you have no idea how he's going to accomplish it. By the way, God doesn't always tell us what he's going to do. That's the whole point of faith, right? If you see it, it's not faith, it's sight, correct? There you go. So he says, how shall I know that I will inherit it? What's he kind of asking, do you know? Yeah, maybe a sign. And I don't know if a sign helps him. But something, you know, there's nothing so far that's been tangible. What does he have? He has words. He has a lot of stuff. He's in a land that he doesn't really own. He's a sojourner. It's not his yet. Right? Like Hebrews says, he never got it. He never received the land, right? He looked for a land, you know. Ultimately, his builder and maker was God, right? But so he didn't receive the promises, the book of Hebrews says. Those were yet to come, right? Past his lifetime. So what's God do? Look at verses 9, 10, and 11, that segment. So he, God, said to him, Abram, bring me a 3-year-old heifer, a 3-year-old female goat, a 3-year-old ram, a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. It's not like he's going to do some kind of magic trick or something. Verse 10, then he brought all these to him and cut them in two, down the middle, and placed each piece opposite the other, but he did not cut the birds in two. And when the vultures came down in the carcasses, Abram drove them away. Now, it's interesting to read some of the commentaries, what they start talking about. Everything becomes a picture of something else. I'm thinking, I don't think so, but I think it was vultures that he was chasing away. I'm pretty deep that way. But so God directs Abram to prepare, we don't know this yet, but prepare a ceremony. Now, no birthdays that I've ever had or ceremonies that I've been in, weddings, funerals, or whatever, have ever had a heifer, a goat, a ram, and all cut in half, laying there, plus a turtle dove and a young pigeon. So this is different. This has been actually a big challenging passage for people because it's like it doesn't explain it. It kind of assumes that you know what's going on. In fact, Abram kind of understood what was going on because God said, go get this stuff. Abram went and got it and cut him in half. Okay? So there seemed to be an understanding that Abram knew what was being asked. Okay, number 4. We'll come back to that. Verse 12. Now when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and behold, horror and great darkness fell upon him. Then he said to Abram, know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and will serve them, and they will afflict them 400 years. And also the nation whom they serve I will judge. Afterward they shall come out with great possessions. Now as for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace. You shall be buried at a good old age. But in the fourth generation they shall return here, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. Okay, God reveals here some of the future, right? What does he reveal? Let's just break it down here. You want to shoot it off? Who? Okay, so he starts off with your descendants. Okay? That's the first word that grabs you, and it's like, oh, by the way, I don't have any? Okay? Okay? So God is stating it like it's a done deal. The descendants will be strangers in a land, okay? Strangers, visitors, foreigners. We strangers in a land that's not this land, right? What else? There's at least two more things. Yeah, they will serve. Slaves, in a sense, okay, which they were. What else? Huh?
They all come out, though.
Okay. After how long?
400 years.
What can you tell me before that?
They were afflicted.
Okay, afflicted. How long? Now, heading off at the pass, mostly I wouldn't know this either, only because I read it. Jacob was down in Egypt for 430 years. Or by the time Jacob went down and the Israelites came back, it was 430 years. Contradiction in the Bible, you can throw it away now because there's a contradiction, right?
Not necessarily.
No.
400 years is the years that they were afflicted. It wasn't that they were, for the first 30 years, they weren't afflicted.
Did you catch that? They were afflicted 400 years. It doesn't say they were there for 400 years. They weren't afflicted the whole time they were there. Okay? So they were afflicted for, that's why I put those two together. And then they will come out, all right? And what else can you say, what else did he say about Abram? He would live long and prosper, right? You got to live a long life. Life's going to be good. He's had some run-ins. Remember, this was right after he rescued Lot. You know, think of this. Remember, the first thing he says, "Don't be afraid, Abram. I'm your shield and your great reward, both. So don't be scared." So, partly being scared is it, you know, an early demise of some reason or other. Then he says, "No. You should go to your fathers in peace. Be buried at a good old age. So live long in peace," right? He's not going to be killed. And then the fourth generation will return. This is before he has any kids. God is telling him that it's the fourth generation that will come back. Okay? And he says one more thing. And I don't claim to fully understand it, but the iniquity of the Amorites, which live in the land that he's in, is not yet, let's say, full? Completed. Or, yeah. But the idea is God's letting, it's kind of giving him a chance. Seems like the Amorites. Okay, that's what it looks like. He's, you know, I'm not ready. They're still here. I'm still giving them a chance, so to speak. So this is all the future. He kind of pulls back a glimpse of what's going to happen and says, oh, your descendants, you will have descendants. And they're going to be strangers in a different land. They'll be slaves in that land. They'll be afflicted for 400 years. Then they'll come out. You'll live long in peace. Long life. You'll die in peace. Fourth generation. So that, God can't even talk about generations unless, we talked about this last week a little bit, unless he's in control of people's birth, living, and death. Okay? That whole cycle. But four generations, he's guaranteeing there'll be four generations at least. Okay? And the iniquity of the Amorites not yet full. So, again, we don't fully understand that, but God has a bigger plan than you and I can even imagine. Questions or comments to this point? Okay, the next point is kind of the main focus of the lesson, verse 17. And it came to pass when the sun went down, and it was dark, that behold, there appeared a smoking oven and a burning torch that passed between those pieces. Okay? Let's draw this over here as much as it will be called art. Okay? But you have half, and I don't honestly know how they cut a cow in half. And then you have a goat. I don't know how to draw a good.
Do the same thing here with horns.
Huh?
Do the same thing with that kind of horns.
And a ram. Okay. Yeah, let's just put a. That looks like a goat, too. That. A ram. I don't know if I can repeat that. A woolly ram. I should have made one of you do this, and then we could have mocked you the whole time, right? Okay, and then I'm going to put a bird here and a bird here. No idea. But they split them, okay? They didn't split the bird, so I figured, well, I'll put one on each side. It'll be balanced, you know. Balanced diet or something. What they talk about here, and these are laying down, and the vultures were trying to pick at the real animals, stuff like that, okay? But what's going on here? It's not a sacrifice. Because the sacrifices are consumed usually with fire. Okay, so it's something different. And again, this confused people for a long time because they didn't know what was going on. It didn't really explain it. Well, some of the discoveries they found now is that this was a method of confirming a covenant between two people. Okay? And what they would do is, people number one and people number two stick figures here, would walk through these animals that are split together as a form of agreement to say, if we do not fulfill our part of the covenant, may we be like these animals. By this? No.
No, if they don't keep their...
Right, but it's also basically saying, may I be like these animals split in half if I don't fulfill... It's kind of a very solemn, deep commitment. Okay? It's like signing the deal in blood kind of thing.
It's a blood covenant.
In the sense that, may I be killed if I don't keep my part of the deal. Okay? What happens, though, in verse 17? Let me read it again. And it came to pass when the sun went down and it was dark that, behold, there appeared a smoking oven and a burning torch that passed between those pieces. Okay, here's number five, and we'll start working through this, okay? God confirms. What do we say normally? It's how many people go through? God confirms his one-sided covenant. In other words, what we're saying, what we understand this to be is that it is an unconditional ratification of the covenant. Ratification of the covenant. How is it unconditional? It's not dependent upon Abram at all. Okay? Now, a couple things here. I'm going to erase some of this so I have some space. I have four statements under four statements underneath this here. Maybe we'll come back to this in a little bit. Notice in verse 18, the next box down, it says, on the same day that the Lord made a covenant with Abram. This is the first time covenant and Abram go together. I had to stop and look, and I went back, and I'm like, covenant is not mentioned. Promise is mentioned, but no covenant, okay? So notice here, God had made promises to Abram, okay, get you out of land, to the land I'll show you, I'll give this to you, I'll make you like this. And you're saying, what's the difference between a covenant and a promise from God? I don't know, except that a covenant is formal. And a promise is informal, maybe? I mean, whatever God says promises, you can count on it. But a covenant is like sealing the deal. Okay?
Promises are the terms of the covenant.
But you can have promises without a covenant. And he did.
But what I'm saying is, God laid out the terms of what was going to be the covenant.
to him, he made sure he understood what was wrong. But when you go back to chapter 12, verse 1, he lays out all the promises.
It seems like a covenant is, okay, what's my part and what's your part? Laid down. The promises existed before the covenant. Okay? He expands on it. So, but I'm saying it's like, Abram's like, how do I know this is really going to happen? Or how are you going to do this? And so God basically says, I will do this without anything on your part. Now that doesn't mean Abram's descendants won't sin and there's repercussions for that sin. They wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. But God did not abandon his covenant. Okay? This is the first mention of a covenant with Abram. Again, kind of blew my mind because I was thinking in my mind, covenant all the time. Okay? Yes. That's what it appears. Just like God talked to Joseph while he was sleeping in Matthew 1. So the first mention of the covenant with Abraham is verse 18, and this appears to be the, what's the word I'm looking for, Dory, where you actually execute the covenant. Execute. And it isn't because there's dead animals there. But you get it ready. But this is the signing of the covenant or whatever. Okay, yeah. It's the second covenant mentioned in the Bible that I could find. Who was given the first covenant? You make a good reformed person. Adam is probably a good guess. I happen to know the answer, so. Noah. Yeah, it wouldn't have been Moses. He wasn't alive yet, right? Abram had no descendants. Yeah, it just wasn't a covenant in terms. It just wasn't used as the term covenant. I'm not arguing. I've heard it.
When you go back to this other point, promises, from what I can see and what I can try to understand, there were a lot of things that God promised to Abram up to this point. And a covenant is basically
Agreement, right?
This is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to do it. End of statement. And both parties partake of it, are involved in it. That's my understanding.
These are the conditions of the covenant.
Conditions of the covenant. It doesn't mean that, you know, it's not that God says, all right, this is promises, and this is a covenant, or this is a. That he was outlining very clearly to Abraham what was going to be involved in this covenant. Now it came down to this point. And this is this is the time that we're going to ratify this covenant. We're going to put it in play.
Well, it's interesting that Abram, and I don't want to put more into the text than is there, but it's interesting that this happened after Abram said, how will I know this will happen? So God basically, even though he's given promises, he basically signs the deal and says, I am taking full and exclusive responsibility for this. So nothing is on you, it's all on me. And so it's like, I don't know, someone signing a mortgage for your house, and they're saying they're taking care of it, you have no bills. So, and it's all on them. Go ahead, Jim.
Verse 6 gives us, I want to say, a summary statement of what Abraham did. he believed, he saw that he believed God. Verse 7 shows this is how it's going to be implemented. Basically, from 7 on, it's how the implementation. That's it, of his belief. Because there isn't, faith is not passive. It's something that he does. And he's very believing. And God is setting him up for this ratification of fulfilling that those promises. I know that's convoluted, but I hope you get where I'm going.
Yeah, I don't know that I can agree. It's not, I don't see this presented crazy that way. Abram believes God is accounted for righteousness. Right. That's a done deal.
Right.
It's over and done with. And then he goes on, what's he say here? I am the Lord who brought you out of the Ur of the Chaldees to give this land to inherit it. And he's like, well, how do I know I'll inherit it? You know, I'm old. How am I going to inherit this when I die? There's nobody to inherit it.
So,
right.
But then God gives him instructions to set up this.
So
God uses the term this blood covenant, this agreement, and he does it. And that's just, I'm waiting for God to do something, and he falls asleep, he goes whatever, and God says this. You need nothing more than just what I'm telling you.
Yeah. Basically, it looks like God is just affirming with Abram in a formal way that he's taking on full responsibility, unconditional responsibility. In other words, it's not contingent upon what Abram does or his descendants, by the way. So, and it's a little tough to chew on there, but at the same time, the promises were legitimate, they were good, but they didn't really specify the conditions. Could God say, you know what? No more. It's not going to happen now. I give up. I'm not going to, because this, and he basically says, this is going to be done. Signed. And it's just me. There's nothing you have to do to make this happen. I myself will make sure this happens. So it's a very gracious, unconditional ratification of the covenant. Now let's go over covenants a little bit real quick. I'm thinking that's... It's called the Noahic Covenant. The first one. It's more that God will deliver Noah's family. There's the Abrahamic, it's called, or Abrahamic covenant, which then God builds on. Is there a Mosaic covenant? Is it called that? That sounds funny. Mosaic. So it's the law. And then you have, by the way, that kind of builds on this to some degree. And then there's the Davidic covenant, which, again, we haven't got to the... We've only got to this one and this Noahic covenant and Abrahamic covenant we've covered. The Mosaic covenant is at Mount Sinai. The Davidic covenant, basically, God expands his promises that he gave to Abraham through David. So he specifies that in your line is who the Messiah is going to come from, and you will have an eternal, what's the word I'm looking for? Reign. A descendant of yours will reign forever, which, by the way, Jesus is descended from David, and both legally through Joseph and through blood through Mary, right? So he kept that promise. So there's the different covenants. I'm going to tell you more than I know now. When you hear covenants, you hear the word covenant quite a bit. There's even an evangelical covenant church by our house, okay, on Hubble. When you hear covenant, there's people that are covenant. theology. I'll write that down. These are built on covenants that have nothing to do with this. There's three covenants, and I'm having a hard time remembering all three. The first one, and this is supposedly before time began, there was a covenant of works that was assigned to Adam. Anyone remember the other one? There's one more. But ultimately, there's a covenant of grace. There's one more. And it depends on what group you're in, if you believe in all three. I just remember Joel Schroeder taught on dispensationalism. But ultimately, Adam couldn't keep the covenant of works. By the way, there's no statement of that in the Bible. There's no statement of the covenant of grace the way they present it in the Bible. So the covenant theology is built on stuff that they derive from outside and say, well, this is the way God must have done it. And therefore, covenant or reformed would have this view. It has nothing to do with these views. We are D-I-S-P-E-N Sationalists. Now that looks long and it looks bad. You know, why would I want to be that? Does it hurt? Okay? There's two things that are different. Number one, we don't accept this covenant theology at all. There's two things that go along with being a dispensationalist that are key. By the way, dispensationalism comes from the word. We don't use dispensational at all, do we, hardly? But I bet you hear this word all the time, economy. That's the same word. It's the Greek word. Anyone hear the word economy at all? Okay. Eco is the word oikos in the Greek, which means house. Nomi is law. It's the laws of the house. How, and right now it's more focused on financial. But it's basically how God works with people at different times in different ways. And we say there's different times that God has worked in different ways. And I shared this even a couple weeks ago. What were the rules of the Garden of Eden? Huh? Don't eat of this from this particular tree. That's it. You can speed. You can hunt. But that's the rule. That's the one rule you can do. You can eat from any tree of the garden. You just can't eat from this tree. You don't even have to worry about neighbors. You don't have any neighbors. Right? Okay? And then it goes into... They fall, and then it goes from the... they call it Age of Innocence, but it was the tree, right? To conscience. So they just kind of ruled themselves by their conscience. That didn't work well, by the way. You know, Cain killed one, and if he'll be avenged sevenfold, then for me, Lamech, I'll be avenged 70-fold. I've killed two people. So then God ordained government in Genesis 9, where it said, you will hold people accountable. If they shed man's blood, then man should shed their blood. Capital punishment. There's people ruling over others. It's kind of holding people accountable. Then you have promise through Abram. Okay? And that's where we're kind of at right now. And it doesn't mean these don't, like conscience and government and promise, don't have this, some effect or other, but they're all incomplete. And then you have the law, where the law, primarily the nation Israel, is doing that. And then you have the age or dispensation of grace, which we believe we're now in. And then it's the kingdom or the different rules again at different times. We say that based upon what happens here, Genesis 15:6, salvation has always been by faith in God's promises of being fully persuaded that what God had promised He's able also to perform. Okay, so it's not ways of being right with God; it's just different ways stuff is run, and that you see that in here. Okay, in the different the Noahic, the Abrahamic, Mosaic covenants, the two main factors of dispensationalism are twofold. Ethan, you want to tell me? Let's see. He's like, he hadn't even shaved yet today, man. It's like, I didn't expect. Can you give him a shot? I got these beat into my head there, so. You'll do this twice. Two. One is literal interpretation of the Bible. What it says is what it means. When you get into interpretation, when you get in up here to covenant theology, everything has to be, what am I looking for? Metaphor. It represents something else.
Symbolic. If, typology.
Yeah, you know, there's multiple meanings. Even though the Bible doesn't tell you what those meanings are, so that's why Harold Camping can decide that the Lord was coming in 2 years ago back in October.
Right.
You get that, but I'm saying if you listen to someone that is of Reformed or Covenant theology, they'll say, "I know it says Israel, but it means the church." Which brings me to my second point that Ethan remembers now, is that the church does not equal Israel. Let me ask you this now. We're going in full circle here because it makes sense. If God makes an unconditional covenant with Abram and says that, what does he say in the last part there? He says, verses 18, 19, 20, and by the way, the last word is land. Number six is land. He actually... I'll quit eating my marker here. Notice he says, on the same day the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, to your descendants, which he has none yet, to your descendants I have given this land from the river of Egypt. Some people say it's the wadi of whatever, but one guy said it's not a little creek by the word, it's a river. So we're probably talking the Nile. Okay? So Israel's like up here, just in this little sliver. And there's Sinai and then the Nile River. Okay? All the way over to
Euphrates.
So it's just way over here. So it's way more land than they've ever had to date. Okay? Great. Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates. The Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Cadmonites. Isn't that your family, the Kenites? His dad's Ken. The Hittites, the Perizzites, the Rephaim, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Girgashites, and the Jebusites. Okay? All of the people that live here, that's where you're going to have. Okay? God details His land promise. But the idea here is the church, if God gives an unconditional promise to this land, to Abram's descendants, God will still keep His promise. If you're in the covenant or Reformed, you're saying, well, really, now we got to spiritualize it, and that really means that God will give us, and I'm just kind of making this up a little bit, but God will reward us with spiritual accomplishments or spiritual rewards or whatever. So they can't take it literally because they said, for covenant theology, either the church equals Israel, we're now spiritual Israel, or the church replaces Israel because Israel was bad, and so therefore God rescinded all His promises. Well, and this isn't all that we base it on. You see it throughout the Scriptures, that God will keep His promise. He may punish the Israelites at a particular time in a particular place because they were not doing right, but he will fulfill his promise. And you even see in the book of Revelation where that Jesus returns to Israel and rules from Jerusalem. And in fact, the city where he rules from, even in the new kingdom or the new earth, is New Jerusalem. Okay? So it's all tied in here. So he will keep his promise to the nation Israel, descendants of Abram, as well as spiritual descendants like us, that we have the faith like Abram before there ever was a nation Israel. Okay, we're descended from Abraham in a sense spiritually. But God is talking about specific land. He gives a specific measurement. You know, from here to here. He's not talking in metaphorical terms. He's not talking symbolically. It's a real place, and he listed a bunch of people. This is what I'm talking about. And God will keep his promise to the nation Israel. We don't believe that God has permanently cast off Israel. Whereas, if you're in the Reformed or Covenant, you do.
The Reformed people do believe, or Covenant people believe in God. And this is where one of the heresies that has come into the church divorced Israel.
Yeah.
And thus, God believes in divorce.
By the way, that terminology is in the Old Testament. He divorces Israel, but it's not like a permanent thing. He sets them aside. But in the book of Romans, it says he set them aside for a while. Okay? And all this. So God will keep his promise, his covenant to Abram with regard to land, seed, and blessing. The land is specific land that will be theirs. And he promised it to him. It will be theirs forever. Seed, your descendants will be like the dust of the earth. It'll be like the stars of heaven. Okay? And I believe when Paul talks about it, he talks about it both in a physical sense, the descendants through Isaac and then Jacob and down to the 12 tribes, but also he talks about it in a spiritual descendancy. Plus, Abram had other children. We'll talk about that. He had Ishmael, right? Ishmael had 12 sons. Did you know that? And then Abram, after Sarah died, he took a wife called Keturah and several children by her. You think God fixed his body, he fixed it really good. Okay? He had lots of children. Okay, besides that, it said, from you many nations will come, he says. All right? But then also spiritually, we are considered, in a sense, descendants of Abraham in a spiritual way because we have the same faith that he does. Okay? But literal interpretation in the church does not equal Israel. And that changes the entire way you look at the Old Testament. If it's talking about a promise to Israel, you can't automatically move it over and say, this belongs to me. Does that make sense? If it's written to Israel, you can't say, well, this directly correlates to the church. There might be some impact. You might say, God hates this with Israel, so he probably hates it with us too, kind of thing. Or whatever, learn about God's character, whatever. But you can't say, because God promised it to Israel, he also promised it to us. Okay? Oftentimes it's the... It'll even break it up to say it's the Ephraim, which is the northern kingdom, and Judah, the southern kingdom. Specifically talking about the nation Israel again. So, all right? So there's a lot there, but basically God promises to Abraham that he will keep his promise no matter what. Okay? And it's not contingent upon what Abraham does or Abraham's descendants. Again, were they punished? Yes. Were they blessed? Yes. At different times, at different places. But God remains faithful to his covenant with Abram during this time. So questions or comments?